in Red Sonja, Robert Sheehan from the Umbrella Academy, a young Irish actor who's unbelievably good in this film, right? He literally takes the bar and raises it for everybody. So I'm so pleased and proud of him. He plays Emperor Dragon, who's a brilliant man who just wants to use the world's resources, as far as he's concerned, to make the world a better place for people. And Sonya's like, yeah, but you can't kill everything in the process. You can't cut down the forest and kill the animals. Right. So it becomes that's the underlying conversation. And there's all the running, jumping, chasing, sword fighting, and emotions, because that's really what mattered to me, the concept of compassion at the heart of conflict.
Hello and welcome to a Screen Time special with director MJ Bassett. We're very, very pleased to have you here.
I'd like to be described as a special. Thank you very much. It's nice to
Yeah.
be here.
Well, it's been a full circle journey for us. Way back in the day, we had the pleasure of interviewing you on Solomon Kane, which at the time was something of a breakthrough because you'd done some TV work, you'd done some early directorial work with Death Watch, Wilderness, and then Solomon Kane was maybe your first bigger budget production that
Right,
I
that's
remember
true.
looking at.
I would concede that that is the truth, yes.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. It's a long time though, but it's interesting because we're here today predominantly around your latest, which I'm going to tacitly say is your biggest probably so far, which is Red Sonja.
You're saying
And
biggest in budget or biggest in scale? What's your criteria for bigness?
I know I do not know, but it just feels like the biggest. I mean, I've seen the trailer and it's big. It
It
seems
looks big.
like
That's my job is to make not a lot look like a lot. That's my job.
I've noticed that they always pull you in for the season finale to go out with a bang in TV
That's
shows.
it. You want somebody killing or am I allowed to swear on this thing, by the way?
Yes,
What's okay, killing or fucking. That's kind of what that's what I'm brought in for.
they bring you along. Well, we'll get to Red Sonja, but I guess I wanted to dip into a few things along the way. I noticed you started earlier on Bugs. Do you remember the TV show Bugs? I'm going to take you back to
I
Bugs.
got fired off Bugs.
Wow. I mean, I loved that show, but a long
No, it's
time ago.
terrible.
But it was
Okay.
terrible. It was terrible. But
Saturday tea time action drama. I got fired off it because I really wanted to be a director. So I kept saying I want to direct an episode. And also for me saying we'd write these scripts and I'd put in these big action set pieces and they'd get scaled down and down and down and down. And then I got so frustrated, which is, I mean, stupid in a way because Carnival Films have gone on to make really huge stuff. But yeah, no, I was quietly let go from that for being a gobby little shite, I think, probably is the truth.
well, you had some grand ideas because that's how I think Death Watch got to be your film, because people were interested in the screenplay you wrote. And then, but you went, no, I want to direct this.
Well, yeah,
Probably.
because it's the only way of getting. I mean, unless you're coming from a commercials and you're some kind of visionary that people want to kind of like, oh my God, that person's incredibly skilled with whatever. I was never that. So, when I'd written a bunch of screenplays which weren't going anywhere, and I loved the horror genre. I mean, I grew up. I'm a child of kind of the 80s video boom, so a lot of that was very much genre driven stuff, like the sword and sorcery stuff, which is what I really loved. But also the horror stuff, and particularly the video nasties, so the Wes Cravens and the Sam Raimis and the John Carpenters of the world, and the Tobe Hoopers and all those guys. So to figure out how to get into the business, it was like the way in is always horror.
Seems like
Because
it. You can
it's,
do it on a
well,
budget.
because it's, you can do it on a budget. It's normally contained. So with Death Watch, which, it's a long time ago now, so people won't really remember it, but it was a horror movie set in the trenches of World War One. And the key pitch, forget the quality of the script, because that's kind of inconsequential. The pitch was these nine guys in a hole in the ground.
Yes.
Right? And
Yes.
that was kind of an easy thing to conceptually get across to finances, and certainly because I was asked by, so I got offered, I'd written a bunch of stuff, couldn't get it off the ground. Some of those scripts I'm still trying to get made, so never give up. I wrote this thing, and about seven or eight people, companies wanted it. So I knew I was onto something. It was a good script, I have to say, it was a good script. And they, I said I want to direct, and I'd made some short films, so they saw the short films, and they were like, we don't think so. And then little by little, I got that list got whittled down to, you know, to and two, and then for, you know, three, and then two, and then finally, like one company said, "All right, well," and they gave me a few thousand dollars to go off and shoot a scene from the movie, just sort of like a proof of concept that I was even
Oh,
capable of
nice.
doing it.
And you
So
did it.
I did. Well, I went off to I lived up in Shropshire, and I went to a local farmer. I went to the farmer and said, "Can I rent a field for a weekend that you're not using?" And I got on some earth moving equipment. I dug a trench. I dug a World War I trench, and I went to the local army base and I borrowed a load of ammo boxes and dressing. And then I had enough money to actually cast some human, you know, proper human actors. And one of those proper human actors was a 17-year-old James McAvoy,
Ha!
who I promised to give a part in the feature if I ever got off the ground, and it did. And I offered him a role, and he was doing theatre, so he couldn't be in it. So James
Oh,
McAvoy was incredibly nearly in Death Watch. But I got Jamie Bell
you
and
got
Andy
Jamie Bell,
Ferguson. Yeah,
yeah.
I got Jamie Bell. Yeah, but Jamie's the reason the movie got made finally, because he was just coming off Billy Elliot, and he'd beaten Russell Crowe for best actor at the BAFTAs. That can you imagine that? You'd beat Russell and had to get an Oscar. So Jamie was sort of tacitly interested, and he didn't want to be a leading guy, but he wanted to be an ensemble, and the movie was very much an ensemble movie. So I went to see Jamie, and I mean, this is an anecdote I told ages ago, but he was nervous about it, and I was visiting him. He was staying with Stephen Daldry, who directed Billy Elliot. And Stephen had a tennis court, and Jamie was playing tennis. And I said, "Hey, I'll play your tennis to be in the movie. If I beat you, you've got to be in my movie." So
Oh,
it was like the
that'd be
Wimbledon
nice.
final. I was fought so aggressively. I think he was going to do it anyway, but I fought so aggressively and pounded him into the ground. And I said, "I beat you, now you've got to be in the movie." So he was.
That
And
is
that's how I got made.
such a good story.
I don't know if it's true. I mean, like, it's a true story, but I don't know that it was the deciding factor. I think there are probably other things at work, but I love the anecdote.
It's still very nice. I mean,
Yeah.
yeah, it's very nice to think that, back level Hollywood could be
That's how shit gets made. But honestly, that's how shit gets made,
what, on the tennis
right?
courts winning a
But
match.
in those, but in honestly, it's in that. That's. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 plus years now, and I can tell you, the movies get made because of. You're having dinner with somebody, or you know, you're going out, you're meeting a financer, and they say, "What we really want is a script like this." And you go, "I've got a script like that." And they go, "Yeah, okay, we'll do that one." Right? I always thought it was that you write a screenplay, it goes on a, you know, like it goes to an executive, and the reader reads it, and they give coverage, and then it goes to this person, and go, and they go, "That's not how movies get made. It's not. It just doesn't work like that." It's, you know, you go to. I mean, even I get sent so many screenplays to read. By other people, and I'm still struggling to get mine made. It's like there's never, I've never felt really secure in the business, even though I've been doing this for, you know, 20 years and have made a relatively decent career. I'm still always slightly like, "Oh God, where's the next job coming from? What am I going to do?" Right?
Yeah, but
It's
you've got the ability, from what I can see on your filmography, you've got the ability to just kind of dip into TV as a very much called upon for your talents kind of person, because they
Yeah,
always
I'm
dream of
lucky.
it,
Yeah,
that
I'm very lucky. Yeah, I mean,
is.
but it's one of those things where I only ended up doing television because I went to director jail, right? For a after I made Silent Hill Revelation, which by any metric is not a great movie. By even by my own metric, I mean, I'm very publicly said it. You know, I know the movie isn't what I wanted it to be, and I can. There's loads of reasons for that, but you know, I'm the director, so I get, you know, I take the responsibility. That the books, I get the credit and I get the blame. And after Silent Hill came out, you know, it was a critical disaster. It was the audience didn't like it. It made some money. It made like $60 million, so it did sort of pay for itself. But by nobody's, you know, metric was it a success. And I couldn't get a job. I mean, I couldn't get a job. I was desperate because the point is that it takes about 2 years to make a movie. So even though you get paid like a decent amount of money, that fee is spread across 2 years, right? So unless you're in the millions of dollars category, you know, certainly wasn't back then, that money's, and I don't do commercials, and I hadn't done TV, so I had no other way to make a living. So Silent Hill was I was deeply unhappy personally at the time, which for reasons which have obviously become public. You know, this was going on. And I made a movie, and I sort of halfway through the movie, I knew that it was incorrect. I sort of felt that I got it wrong, and I didn't know how to course correct it. You feel, and it's an awful feeling knowing something's getting away from you, and you've got 150 people coming to work every day, and you've got to be like, yay, let's get on with it. And I'm dying inside, figuring I'm shooting this fucking thing in 3D, which is the worst format ever created. And that was studio pressure.
Yep.
If they were like, you do it in 3D or you don't make the movie. Well, I'm making the movie, right? So, and this was with the producer of Solomon Kane. So we'd made Kane together. And he's Samuel Hadida, a French producer who died a few years ago, rest his soul.
I
But
know him well. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, but Sammy had said after Kane, we'll do another movie together. And then he called up and said, do you play computer games? Do you play Silent Hill? I mean, yeah, I love Silent Hill. Great. I wasn't like a super nerd, but I played it. It's fantastic. And he said, well, I've got the rights and I'm going to lose the rights. And this other director, Roger Avery, who was going to do it, ended up in jail because he killed somebody in a drunken car crash. And Sammy, was like, I gotta make the movie. Will you make the movie? I was like, yeah, I'll make the movie. And I said, what kind of movie do you want? And he said, oh, I want this kind of movie. So I serviced his desires for the film, which is not the way to make a movie. That you like with Solomon Kane, it was like, I know what this film is. I am making this movie.
Yeah.
Right? And for all the fact that there's things I would still change about it, I'm incredibly proud of Solomon Kane because it's me. I mean, as a filmmaker, that's what I do. And Red Sonja is more or less the same. It went through some teething trouble, but it's still, oh, that's what MJ does.
Yeah.
Whereas Silent Hill, and I've met, obviously Death Watch is a pretty good, retrospectively, people really respect Death Watch. Wilderness was fun and Kane was good filmmaking. And then Silent Hill came along and I just fucked my career. And I was done. I couldn't get a work, and I only got into. And we're coming back to the reason, the television thing. I'd cast an actor called Philip Winchester in Solomon Kane when he was, and Phil had not long been out of drama school. In fact, I'd actually cast Phil in a horror movie that never got made. That's how I knew him. So he'd come. He did a brilliant audition as a young man just out of drama school, and I cast him. Film fell apart on the day that the British government changed like the tax laws or something. So like 50 movies fell apart on one day, and mine was one of them. And Phil, but I put him in Solomon Kane. He's great in Solomon Kane, and he was in trouble. He needed a job, so I saved his ass. And I'd been talking to him. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm making this movie, Silent Hill. Nobody likes it. I haven't got to work." He said, "Hey, come and do my TV show." I went, "Well,
Strike
Strike Back."
back.
Strike Back, and I knew about Strike Back, hadn't watched lots of it. But like, yeah. I said to Phil, honey, I love you, but you're an actor. You can't offer me a job, even if you're number one on the call sheet, which you are. But it turned out that production company had seen Solomon Kane and Death Watch and thought, yeah, we'll bring MJ in for a meet. And I met them. They said, yeah, we got an episode in South Africa. And because I'd done natural history filmmaking when I was very young,
Yeah.
obviously, I was desperate to get to Africa, and it was a free ticket to Africa. And I went down there, and we made this crazy show. And I met Sullivan Stapleton, who was the other lead. We got on like a house on fire, and it turned out I'm much, much better at action than I am at horror.
You
Right?
love the action, don't you?
I'm so listen. I'm a pretty good horror director. I'm a fucking world class action director. Right? And I will tell you this, and this is the direct quote. I worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger on something a couple of years ago,
I know.
and I'm British, so I hate bigging myself up. But Arnold Schwarzenegger said to me, you are the best action director I have ever worked with, apart from James Cameron.
Wow.
And I'm like, I should just retire. I should just retire. I should quit on my high.
Yeah.
Now he
That's
probably says that to everybody he works with, but he said it to me, and I'm
pretty
taking that
good.
to yeah, I'm taking that to the bank.
I do notice a pattern. I mean, I hinted at it already. They brought you in, I think, for the season two finale of Taken, the TV show, back in the
Probably, I don't
day.
remember. Yeah.
They brought you into Iron Fist, Night Flyers, Alter Carbon, love Alter Carbon. But Reacher, they brought you in for the season finale of season one. Terminalist, they had you,
No,
and
I
then
did season through episode three of Terminal List.
yeah. But then FUBAR was the final episode of season two.
Was it the final? No, it wasn't. It
12,
wasn't
wasn't
the
it?
final. No. It was the big action episode, right? So
Right.
in
Okay.
television, what tends to happen is the penultimate episode tends to
Goes
be the bigger
big.
action. And then the final episode is the wrap up. So when I go for an interview for talking about television, I'll generally say to the showrunners or the producers, give me the thing that you don't think you can do or the thing that you're scared of. I mean, mostly it's just give me a damn job, right? So you go whatever you want. And so for Nick Santori, who runs Reacher, and the reason I haven't gone back to the subsequent seasons of Reacher is simply because they've never been available. So they're asked every time. and I've just been doing something else, so it's not timing's not worked out. And I've actually just come off doing a Reacher spin-off, which actually was the two season finale episodes, which were the so starting the last, the sort of the final, and then the, you know, the penultimate and the big action one. And again, that showrunner, a guy called Nick Santora, basically just says, "Hey, MJ, you know the action. I'm not even, I know what the story needs to be, but if you have a better approach to blowing this up or having this gunfight, just go for it." And that all kind of grew out doing Strike Back because I did so much of that. And that to this day, I would still say is probably the best action show. Is it? Yeah, it might be the best action show on that's ever been made. I would like to see. There's been bigger action for sure. There's more expensive action. But in terms of crashing cars, shooting guns, flying helicopters, and just gritty on the ground military action, I think it's the best one that's ever been done.
Nice. So you're
You're going to have
doing
people
a.
comments. Lots of people in your comments are going to go, "What the heck is she talking about? This
Oh,
is
I'm.
better or that's better." But you know, like I did Terminal List, and I would say Terminal List, which had wall-to-wall military advisors, and then my episode was not a particularly action-driven one. It was the one that kind of ground into the story, you know, when Chris Pratt's character finds out he's got a brain tumor and then he's gonna blow up. So that was much more character driven. But even the big action stuff they were doing at the end, even though I had like all the Delta boys in the world, the Navy SEALs and the, you know, the Marines, yeah, no, I wiped the floor with them.
Strike Back is a whole lot of fun, and I
It was
am
great
now
show.
extra excited about Neagley, assuming they keep that title. That I'm
Which her name is Frances Neely. I mean, the show is Reacher, and the next one is Neely. So I suppose they're going to keep it.
did it work out well?
Lots of fun, tough one. I mean, we Canada in the late winter, and then, but yeah, I had a good time. I mean, I like these things. Partly there's a lack of response. I mean, you know, as a director, you're responsible for everything, but as a TV director, if you're just passing through a show, you haven't created it. There's much less responsibility. So I'm only responsible for directly what's on the floor, what happens in the camera. So I'll be given a script and I'll say, is this the script you want? This is what you want. This is what you in the studio and the showrunner and everybody else has agreed. And they go, yep, that's what you want you to shoot. I go, great, I'll do this. When you're doing a feature, which I'm writing or producing as well as directing, I'm responsible for everything. You know, so I'm fighting with the studio, I'm looking at the budget. You know, something like Neely, it's like I'm saying, I want to do this, and then somebody will go, can't afford that. Think of another way of doing it. So it becomes this, for me, doing television is more like a vacation, right? I love it. I mean, I really love it. And I also love it because you meet new actors and you meet new crews and I get to go around the world. I mean, I've been around the world on the back of television. And it's fantastic. You know, I went to New Zealand to do Ash versus Evil Dead. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, Ash versus Evil Dead must have been a lot of fun.
It's a riot. I took over from Sam Raimi. I literally took a show over from Sam Raimi, who I had cut school to watch Evil Dead, right? I got an illegal videotape you know, under the counter back in the day. I cut school. I got in trouble with the head teacher. I went to the head teacher's office, who said to me, "What possible use is this going to be to you?"
And
Right?
there you are
T
taking
turns
over from
out,
Sam,
a lot of fucking use, right? Right.
very
So
nice.
that's the thing is like you say, you don't really know. And I mean, I wanted to be a vet. I didn't even want to be a film director to start with. I mean, that was my great passion. And I think if you waved a magic wand and said, what would you do? I'd still be a vet in Africa if I could. Right. Which is one of the reasons I take all my movies to Africa because I like to spend time out in the bush.
I did notice that with Rogue and Endangered Species. I did notice
Yeah.
a flavor for something a bit different there.
Yeah. Well, because we shot half of Strike Back every year, we shot in South Africa. So, and I also did a movie called Inside Man 2, which is
Did
an unworthy sequel to a really, really good movie.
yeah.
But the movie, I mean, Inside Man 2 is fine, but it shouldn't, I mean, it's not a sequel to Spike Lee's amazing
No.
movie, but you know. But then they call you up and say, do you want to go make a movie? I said, yeah, I'll make a movie and I had a great time. But I shot that in Cape Town in South Africa. It's set in New York and there is one street in Cape Town which has a couple of Art Deco buildings which look a little bit like New York. So the whole movie is basically set on this intersection, you
That's a
know.
very nice way of doing it, isn't it? The doubles for everything, though. Go to Vancouver. You know,
Yeah.
it's
Well,
but.
Toronto has been New York forever, right? Because we're always, again, the business is entirely about saving money or so like
Yes.
the tax break. So New York was always terribly. I mean, I've shot a lot in New York and it's great. I did a show called Power, which was, again, season finale. I did do all those. Everyone gets killed. or they fuck each other. But I, you know, so I went to New York and I shot a line in New York, which is an amazing place. But Toronto for years and years and years was a good New York double. And now you go to Bulgaria. I mean, I shot Red Sonja in Bulgaria, and the studio there's got like a couple of New York streets, you know, on the back lot.
I'm not
You know,
surprised.
so you're great. I can shoot a bit in New York if I have to.
They've had a lot of production shot out there. By now, they should have rebuilt pretty much everything you need.
They have, and that's just because it's super cheap.
Yes. So let's go on that journey. Let's go on the Robert E. Howard, love, swords and sorcery, fantasy. Did Solomon Kane? Solomon Kane is Howard. And for those listening and watching, Howard is the guy who created Conan, Cole the Conqueror, Solomon Kane, and
Bran McMorn, all those, yeah.
and in some ways Red Sonja, or at least a version which was then taken in a different direction, a slightly differently spelt Red Sonja.
Completely different direction, is in name only. The front
Yeah.
of my movie, Red Sonja, it still says created by Robert E. Howard,
It does, but it's
which
someone
is a
else's.
contractual thing. It's a
Yeah.
it's bullshit, but it's
There,
what
there,
it, you know, listen, what it is.
there's a lot of legal back and forth, which was why, since the 80s Bridget Nielsen Arnie movie never got a sequel, there was like 20 years of back and forth, I think a legal case, and then endless casting. They had Rose McGowan, Amber Heard, Hannah John Kamen, and a whole bunch of different directors in the seat across
I
a
know them, I
20-year
don't.
period.
I
Yeah.
know them all, yeah.
And then it landed with you, which in a strange sort of way, I like all of these people, and I can see why they wanted to push it in that direction. But this is full circle. This is back to Solomon Kane days. This is what you love.
Well,
And
that's how I got it. Do you want me to tell you the story of how I got the movie?
yes, please,
That's
because
what we're
yeah.
here for. I'll tell you an anecdote. So, obviously, I remember the first movie with Bridget and Arnold, who wasn't called Conan in that movie for contractual
No,
reasons, right?
yeah. But was Conan?
But
Let's, you know.
clearly, it was Conan for everybody. It's a terrible movie. I mean, God bless Bridget and Arnold, and I love them lots. But you know, they and Arnold knows it's a bad movie, and
It's a bad
you know,
movie. Yeah.
it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie. But she's a great character. So obviously I knew about, because I'm a Robert E. Howard fan, I knew about The Shadow of the Vulture and the short story that she appears in as Red Sonja of Rigatona or something. I can't
Yeah,
remember what
yeah.
she is, but it's like something like that. And she's fighting the Turks, I believe, you know, it's all that Ottoman Empire stuff. And then Roy Thomas recreated her in 1973 for Marvel, and she became the chainmail bikini barbarian woman who could appear alongside Conan and essentially be a man, but drawn like a woman. Which is what I always, you know, it was always that kind of thing. She's very much a male gaze character. And that's fine. That's what it was back in the day. So I made Solomon Kane, and everybody said to me, what do you want to do next? Right? Do you want to do Conan? Not like they had the offer, but it was always that
Yeah.
question, would you do Conan? Like, yeah, I'd do Conan, but I'd rather do Red Sonja. Now, this is me pre-transition. So I hadn't come out. So I was still like a dude with muscles and a beard and all that kind of shit that goes with that world. And they didn't understand. But now, of course, everybody understands why I wanted to do, you know, a strong female character. But the company that owned the rights to Sonya, a company called Millennium, and they made the Expendables and the Hitman's Bodyguard and all the House Fallen movies. So they trade in, and they made the Conan picture, the last one with Jason Momoa. So they trade in that genre very much. And they developed it for 17 years, give or take. And, you know, I think you said Robert Rodriguez, that poster, that Red Sonja poster is still hanging in the studio where I was shooting my Red Sonja, you know, with Rose McGowan licking the bloody sword, right? Now, you know exactly what that movie would have been. Robert would have done it like a comic book,
He would, yes,
right?
in city
Sin
style.
City kind of vibe. Yeah. And yeah, God bless him, but that's not me. I don't do that. And then I can't remember who else was doing it. Bryan Singer was going to do it, and Amber was going to be in it. And then Joey Soloway, who created Transparent, was going to do it. And during this time, I'd met with Millennium a bunch of times, and I pitched to do it, and they never gave it to me. That's fine, you know. Kane's great, but didn't really make any money, and we're looking for a bigger name director. And I was doing more and more TV, and I hadn't done a movie for a while. And then I kind of started making these little movies again, which are all, you know, pretty decent. And so I'd met them as they were sort of Joey's development of the script wasn't really working, and she didn't feel like she was going to do it. Excuse me, they were going to do it. And I remember meeting with Millennium and simply it had fallen apart. And I just said, "Are you just going to offer it to me now, then? Right? Just what are you waiting for? I am the most qualified person in this town to make this movie." And they looked at me like I was crazy. And they said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah, just give me the goddamn picture. What's the matter with you?" And they called the next day and said, "Are you serious? You want to do it?" I said, "Yep." They went, "Okay, it's going to be very low budget for what you need to do. It needs to be shooting in 3 months' time in Bulgaria because the rights are coming up. You reckon you can do it?" And I went, "This is my world, right? Not
And they
much
gave it
money,
to
lots of
you.
pressure. Give it." And Hannah John was, I think, was attached to Jerry's thing. I thought, "No, I want to start again and just flatline it." They'd had a script which I read and went, "Oh, it's not really me." But so I used the bones of that script and I wrote something that I wanted to do. And whether you like the movie or not, I mean, that's going to be everybody's choice, but that's the movie I wanted to make.
Very nice. And you got Matilda Lutz on board. It was
So I
fierce
saw, I
in
well, I
Revenge.
seen, well, that's the thing, that's what everybody knew. So I'd met, so Millennium really liked Matilda. And I auditioned lots and lots of women for it. And they were, from like MMA fighter types who were just all the physical without maybe the subtle.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make a movie which, I think previous draft of the script and Joey Soloway's was very much about a kind of a male-female divide, the feminism and, the gender issue. And even though I am who I am, and obviously gender issues are very important to me, I did not want to make a movie about that,
Yeah.
right? So in my Sonya, I don't think anybody mentions she's a woman, right? It's just not an issue, right? There are men, there are women, there are more strange-looking humanoid creatures, there are cyclopses, there are, it doesn't make any difference, right? You're just a person in the world.
Yeah.
What I was looking for, again, because I'm an environmentalist, I wanted to make something which had a richer theme about environmentalism and just protecting the world from, in this case of this movie, through industrialization or the coming of development. And in Red Sonja, Robert Sheehan from the Umbrella Academy, a young Irish actor who's unbelievably good in this film, right? He literally takes the bar and raises it for everybody. So I'm so pleased and proud of him. He plays Emperor Dragon, who's a brilliant man who just wants to use the world's resources, as far as he's concerned, to make the world a better place for people. And Sonya's like, "Yeah, but you can't kill everything in the process. You can't cut down the forest and kill the animals." Right. So it becomes that's the underlying conversation. And there's all the running, jumping, chasing, sword fighting, and emotions, because that's really what mattered to me, the concept of compassion at the heart of conflict. Right. I mean, I made a lot of movies where people get killed and shot and brutally murdered, right? And that's the kind of the movie thing. But I'm obviously getting a bit soppy in my old age. Just that notion of at the end of the day, and though there are lots of fight sequences, there's compassion and there's an attempt to understanding, which I think is probably the single most important thing we need right now.
Yes, I'd agree with that. That's a very worthy thing to bring to a Red Sonja movie. That's possibly more
Yeah.
audacious than what they're asking you to do on that
Well,
kind of
that's the thing.
budget, but.
When I screened it for the owner of the studio at the end, and the post-production process was agonizing because it just took so long because there were financial issues and all these kind of reasons why you stop, start, and
Yeah.
VFX companies go bankrupt and then they have to start again, or so there's all those kind of things, which is why it took so long. But when I finally screened it for the guy who'd been developing it for 17 years, he just went, "Oh God, that's so much better than I expected." Right? Which is this wonderful backhanded comment because it's rich, because the limited audience we had, they were crying because it's about love and compassion. I tried, I wanted to be, and maybe it's the wrong place to put it in a Red Sonja picture. In my opinion, it's exactly the right place to put it. In the same way that Solomon Kane it's a much darker movie, and it's about man looking for redemption and trying to find his God and his belief system. I think fantasy is a perfect excuse for exploring human things, right? And that's what any genre should be. In horror, you can talk about things, and in sci-fi, you can talk about things. Why can't you do it in fantasy?
Yeah, I agree. I think that putting an extra layer in most any movie could benefit it hugely.
Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, what's the
Yeah.
point? It takes so long to make these damn things, and I have to talk to you and everybody else about the film. If I got, what was Matilda like? Oh, she was lovely, and oh, she worked really hard to train and do the fight. Great, she did. All those things are true. But what's the movie about, right? And particularly
Not
when you do
chainmail
women.
armor then.
Well, it is. I mean, it's definitely about chainmail armor because she has to wear a goddamn chainmail bikini, right?
Yeah,
Because
but
it's
I
iconic.
like the joke. I like the joke you put
Because
in.
it's true.
That
It took us
it
so
was
long. Was it me and the right? You know, so long to figure out why would she wear? Nobody would wear this. It's a stupid costume. It's
it's
the
a nice
stupidest
nod.
costume.
It's a nice nod because the
Yeah.
audience wants her to,
Yeah.
is
Because I love it. Yeah.
pretty
You're going to
much
put somebody
why.
out in the public and do it. It's completely true. So it's all that sense of if I'm going to spend a big chunk of my life on this, and it has been a big chunk of my life, I don't know whether the audience is going to like it. It'll get the same, I get, you know, like I get with everything I ever do. This is great. This is shit. You know,
Yeah, I
that's
can
what
see
you
that.
get. And it belongs somewhere in the middle of that conversation. Yeah, it's pretty damn good. And if you like this kind of thing, it's really good. I remember going into a, back in the day when video stores still existed, and you know, get my Friday night movies, pick my things. And there are a couple of my movies on the shelves. Well, so a couple of guys pick up and they pick up one of my movies and he turns to me and goes, what about this? And they go, goes, nah, I heard it was shit. And they just put it down. And I want to go, that was 2 years of my life.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's how the business works. So I have to do things for me, especially now I'm older, right?
I
I'm
can
just, I'm not chasing an audience.
no, I can see that. I can see that. I mean, I have the advantage of reviewing, so I watch most anything,
Right. But is that an advantage? Because that's your, it's also your reviewing as judgment.
you are, yes, and you do put a perspective on it, but I would say that it's been very evident in a lot of what I've seen you do that you're being asked to do a lot with very little. And I think that that's a tough ask. Like giving
No,
you
it's my
Red,
job.
I know, but giving you Red Sonja, saying you haven't got much of a budget and saying put a Cyclops in it.
No, I said put the Cyclops in it.
Okay. I mean, that's
No, I mean, you know, I wrote a script. Well, Tasha Hughes is going to get credit for it, but the script is what it was. And there was nothing in it that I didn't think I could deliver. Right? Now, the truth of the matter is that there's a ton of stuff that got cut out because couldn't deliver it. There just wasn't the VFX budget at the end of the day
to do it.
to
Okay.
do it. And, you know, in the same way that when I made Rogue, this movie with Megan Fox about the lions, you
Yeah, I've
know,
seen
I
that,
got
yeah.
murdered because the lion's not great. It's not awful, but it's just not quite good enough.
It's a
Right?
shame, though, isn't it? I noticed
Because the
that while
movie
watching
around it is
Rogue.
fucking
Yeah.
brilliant. The movie's great, ton
But
of
the
fun.
lion lets it down because
Yeah,
that's not
you
up
get
to
bounced
you.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's up to me in the sense that I chose to do it that way. And again, I'm the director. I get the credit and I get the blame. So, you know,
Okay.
Rogue was $2.5 million or whatever. It's a tiny budget for that kind of film. And there's a CG line in the middle of it. And I try and use it as little as possible. And there's a couple of sequences. It's great. I mean, like the night vision attack is fantastic. And there's a few other shots. But at the end of the day, I remember watching it come together and just going, ah, crap. Right. And there was no wiggle room at all to go back and try and fix it. I mean, I learned lots about the technology we were using to create that lion. But I also knew I was never using real lions. I mean, we on Rogue, we started thinking about, should we just fence the entire set and then let lions loose on the set and just film them moving around and hopefully they're going to do what we want them to do? Because that doesn't work either, because they don't have intent, right?
Yeah.
The moment a lion has intent, you can't be around it because it was hunting, right? And you can't do any behaviors which engage the hunting instinct because then you're dead. So
Yes.
you have to keep the lion passive, in which case it's just looking around. And then you have to kind of cut it cleverly. Nah, fuck that. So I did, and I also didn't really want lions on the set because it stresses them out. So then you go, can we do a CG line? We look around for like CG houses, and somebody picked it, we can do it. And yeah, but you couldn't. You know. And honestly, there's going to be there's some shots in Sonya where you just go, oh yeah, another $1 million would have been great, but it doesn't work that way.
How do you find the technology? I mean, we're digressing on it, but I'm intrigued because you have had to work with a lot of effects over time. How do you find the technology now, and what do you think that AI is going to bring to the table?
Weirdly enough, it feels like CG's going backwards. I
Okay.
don't know why. I don't know why. It's also to do with how we're viewing it a little bit as well, because the moment, like when I just come back to Rogue, when I reviewed Rogue in the proper grading theatre, uncompressed, It's like, well, it looks okay, right?
Yeah.
Not great, but it's okay. We can get away with it. The moment it got compressed to go to Netflix or Amazon,
Yeah.
it fell apart, right? Because there's a flattening process that takes place. So if you watch, Avengers, Endgame, and watch it on Netflix or wherever, the effects don't look very good. They look
Yes.
flat and 2D. It's just a process of the compression algorithms they use, right? And also, not to get too technical, well, actually, your people, this audience probably does want to get technical. The nature of black, the blacks don't work, right? So
No,
the
they get
color
very
space,
blocky. Yeah.
they get blocky, but it's not just that. It's the color space that you do CG in and the color space that you shoot in are not very compatible. So when I did Rogue, I thought I was cleverly going to put the line at night all the time, which actually was the worst thing to do to it, right? Because the blacks don't work.
Right. So
If I
looked
shot it during the,
more artificial.
much flatter is what it looked like. It looked like a layer on top of the existing world. And that was, there's obviously a budget issue with that as well, but it's just the nature of how we're viewing our things a little bit. So, and I think as a filmmaker, you've got to be smart and try and view it in the way that the audience are going to, and mostly people are going to see it on their whatever OLED screens or whatever the new technology is. And I guess the people probably watching this on your particular forum are across their settings, right? On
Yes.
their TVs. No other human beings in the world
No,
are.
I know.
Mostly they're
I
watching it on their
know.
damn phones,
Yes. Yes.
so there's this whole thing of like, I don't know how to supply it to you in the best way. Because there's now so many ways of you watching it. And the thing that has to be, then the thing that has to be paramount has got to be story and character.
Yeah, I can
Right.
see that.
Now, the AI conversation is an interesting one because clearly it's going to become a very important part of our process. I don't want anything to do with it. I won't use it at the moment. I mean, I had one of the actors tragically in Red Sonja tragically died before he got to do his ADR. His additional dialogue recording.
Yep.
And there was only three lines we needed from him. And there was a big debate. Should we could just do a button and use it on AI right now. Feed all his dialogue in and we can spit these three lines. And we said, I'm not, I said, we said collectively as a group, we're not doing that. So we had an impressionist come in to come and do his voice. And you can't tell him that in film. I mean, this was an agreement with his family.
Yeah.
Right. So but then I see that, I mean, the AI slop that's coming out, and I'm again in somewhat in opposition to filmmaker friends of mine who are like, yeah, you will utilize it for this, and we can do that, and you can do it. It's completely helpful, particularly for low budget filmmakers. You can plug a ton of gaps. I mean, like even in my Adobe Premiere that I cut, this movie on, there's an AI setting where you can extend the shot, and it will interpolate the missing frames and add those for you, right? Oh, I mean, it's crappy at the moment, but I mean, we're a year away from it being amazing,
Yeah, exactly. If
right?
that.
Yeah, exactly, if that. But I sort of what's going to happen is there's going to be this bifurcation of the industry where the Marvels and the Disneys and the big studios are going to use AI. They're just going to, right? Because it makes their bottom line better.
Yes.
But you're going to, in the way that vinyl has never fully went away and film never fully went away, there's going to be this move to this is an entirely human production. Right, you'll see a sticker, no AI used. Right, no, I really think that'll be the case. Right,
I'd
so
love
you
to see that.
and it'll
Sorry,
be
I
a
laughed because there's a poster for Liam Neeson's Naked Gun movie which says no AI used,
all
and
right, there you
he's
go.
got 10 fingers.
Yeah,
So
that's right.
it's
I saw, yes, it's true, it's true.
but
But I think
I
that's
think I could
yeah.
see that. That could be something to celebrate, like
Yeah. So analog, it's not quite going to be analog because obviously we're shooting digital, but it will
yeah.
be that notion of. I want something which I know has been generated by human consciousness and has that engage. I mean, even if it's flawed, which it will be, because humans are flawed and that's great, but it's like I've made the shitty decision and not an algorithm. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, I hope you stay true to that. I think that that's a
No, of course I won't. I
fantastic.
need to make a living.
What a journey, though. I mean, I gotta close out by saying I'm very jealous. I mean, the way you started, everything you got into, it would be a dream for me back when I was probably a comparable age to the way you were when you started. I was writing, I was interested in screenplays, I was. This journey, this idea, and everything you've accomplished, pushing your way in there, flipping off the back of Silent Hill to go into TV and then making a name for yourself in action. I mean, it's amazing. It's very impressive, and
Thank you.
yeah, it's a beautiful journey. I can't wait for Red Sonja. Can you give us any clue as to what you might be doing next?
No, because I don't know. I have three movies sort of circling, which, and again, this is the business. It's all about casting, it's all about financing, right? Because again, I live in the indie space rather than the studio space. And that's just how my career went. I've met studios, and I'm sort of too old now. They're looking for a certain kind of filmmaker, which I don't. And I would far rather make something for £500,000, which I have full control over. So there's a kind of couple of really low indies that I'm trying to figure out how to finance. There's a kind of a political thriller out in Thailand. There's a movie with Arnold that I want to do, which again, we're waiting to see about whether that can do. It's just a thriller, it's a military action thriller up in the mountains, which is my kind of first blood meets man on fire,
Nice.
which I really want to do. So we're casting all of these at the moment. And ultimately, it's going to be the first one that gets cast with a person who green lights the movie from a sales point of view, because it's just money. It's
Yes.
just, it's horrible, but that's the industry. If somebody thinks they can make money, you're good to go. If they don't think they can, you'll never get anything made. And it's this—it's art versus commerce all the time. And I live in a slightly commercial space because I make genre, right? But I don't know. It's like I don't know if Sony's going to make any money for anybody. I hope it does. It wasn't terribly expensive, so it will turn a profit,
But if they do, they'll
right?
want that to be a franchise.
They do, and I set it up for a franchise. I'm going to completely set it up. Whether I'm the one who's going to do it, I don't know because I don't know if the studio will ever talk to me again. But it's one of those things where, yes, it should be, and even if this movie doesn't work, and then there'll be a gap, and then somebody else will try. I mean, she's not going away. She's an iconic character, but she's also a character who you can rewrite depending on what you want from her. So the Red Sonja in this movie is my Red Sonja, and I guarantee she's not lots of other people's Red Sonjas, but it's mine.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I can't wait for it. I have watched the trailer, and I am very much on board with checking out your Red Sonja. It's
Thank you.
been
I hope you
an
enjoy it.
absolute delight catching up with you. Too long coming. Thank you so much for spending the time with us.
You're very welcome. Let's do it in another 10 years.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.